The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is the Empowerment Hour. I can promise you that before this hour is up, we will share insights from so many different parts of the world we live in that help us make better choices. For example, my guest in the second part of our program is Dr. Richard Francis, a professor, scientist, research scientist, University of California, Berkeley, and Stanford University. We're going to talk about epigenetics, the growing body of science to challenge the conventional theory of DNA and genetic determinism. We're going to talk about how the people you surround yourself, the animals, the work environment, the home environment, all end up actually impacting your DNA. Very important that we pay attention because this could be a life changer. Then in our issues, we're going to talk about conspiracy theory by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Now, we've all heard that, well, if you believe that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't kill JFK alone, you're a conspiracy nut. If you believe that 9/11 was anything other than an official report, you're a conspiracy nut. In fact, just about anything, you're a conspiracy nut if it doesn't follow the official line. We're going to challenge that today in our issues. The latest on climate and our environmental section, including new information that follows what I shared 7 years ago, 5 years ago, and 3 months ago from Science Daily, just released the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences about the rising sea levels. Wait till you hear how much they're rising, how fast, and how all the climatologists got it wrong. Remember when I said we're in chaos theory? And I actually filmed the guy who was the real-life character from Jurassic Park's Jeff Goldblum character, the chaos theorist. Well, when I asked him, how do you know that it'll be 100 years before the oceans rise large enough to cause any problem to cities? He says, we don't. How accurate can you predict that we're not going to have any major earthquake in California and Oregon and Washington and Alaska? We can't, he said. When I asked him, and I was filming all this, when you say that we are not going to have a problem with temperatures rising to where it would become really challenging to live in certain areas, and that's 100 to 200 years off, how do you know it's not 5 years from now? And he said, it could be. Everything now is in chaos theory. So, let's see what actually has happened to prove his point. And then, coming up, I was asked to give a preview of my next special. I just launched a new program yesterday called the Progressive Commentary Hour, where I'm taking longer, more in-depth, and more scholarly commentaries from people around the world on topics that are important to us, my own included, and then we open it up just on this topic for people's call-ins. My next ones will be real hard-hitting. And they will include how Robert Gates lies and covers-ups earned him a long, prestigious career at the expense of the American people, Robert Perry, revealing why we revel in the pain of others, moral degeneracy and violence in a kill-team nation. Well, that'll get some people's attention, because we're going to talk in depth. That's a long commentary, but I'm going to take you through the whole idea that on the one hand, we tell ourselves in the world that we're kind and we're thoughtful and giving, and indeed many people are. But at the same time, some of the most popular spectator sports and participatory sports and games are extremely violent. And we participate in violence, in the wars. And what does this do to us? And how do we actually acclimate to violence? Why is it that when teenagers are beating each other up and putting it on their cell phones, those are the most popular teen downloaded videos, millions of downloads, when two girls just start wailing away at each other, kicking, hitting, scratching? Why would people watch that? What in the world would have someone engage in that as a spectator effort? That is the reveling in pain of others, the moral degeneracy. And boy, when it catches on early, and it is, imagine what that's going to do when those people get into later parts of their life. Anyhow, a lot of powerful commentaries coming. To the latest on health and healing, for those of you who've been using your fruits, especially red fruits, fruits, concentrates, juices, or powders, good news, once again, you're doing something that's way ahead of the curve. I'm going to guess right now, 10 years. It'll be 10 years before official science declares that what you're doing is what everyone should do. It's just that 10 years from now, you won't have the cancers and the heart disease and the clogged arteries, the hardened arteries, and the brain cells that have calcified, and the plaque buildup, the amyloid plaque in the brain, that your friends and others who are not doing this would do. The latest is from Food Chemistry, the journal. Research from the University of Granada in Spain and the Marche Polytech University in Italy, as published in Science Daily. So why do I say all that? Simply to reconfirm that the best in alternative healing, the best in proving and supporting that the lifestyle choices many of you are making are legitimate. And why do I do that? Because so many people out there have family members who don't believe that the alternative approaches to anything are legitimate. These are the people who don't care about changing their life. If they got cancer or heart disease or arthritis, they would go see an orthodox physician. Even if that therapy was failing, they would stick with them. So if you need any backup support that what you're doing is legitimate and you can share this with other people to say, look, you may think that what I'm doing may seem strange or esoteric, but it's not. This is all from mainstream science. You're just not reading it. Here's what it says. Strawberries boost red blood cells. And this, they eat half a kilo of strawberries every day for 2 weeks to demonstrate that eating this fruit improves antioxidant capacity of the blood. And scientists had previously tried to confirm the antioxidant capacity of strawberries, and now the team did it a little different way. And each day they fed the healthy volunteers 500 grams of strawberries over the course of the day. And then they took blood samples from them after 4, 8, 12, and 16 days, and then after a month. Quote, we have shown that some varieties of strawberries make erythrocytes more resistant to oxidative stress. This could be of great significance if you take into account that this phenomenon can lead to serious disease. Now, why is this important? Relatively simple. By the way, the average bowl, you're going to get about, oh, let's say 200 grams in an average bowl. But if you took a teaspoon of powder, you're getting over 1,000 grams. So the powder is the most concentrated. The concentrate liquid is the second. The juicing is the third, and eating them whole is the fourth. All those should be done. In any case, it works this way. The more fruit you get into your body, the more vegetables, the more antioxidants, more ARAC. The more this protects your cells. That's why when you're exercising or living in a polluted city or you're under stress, or maybe you didn't eat something you should have, or maybe you drank alcohol, that creates free radicals. So free radicals attack the cell. The cell then becomes damaged. For most people, when you have damaged cells, if you're very young, the body can repair a lot of that without a problem. The older you get, the less these cells are repaired, until finally, after the age of 40, you have about 10,000 gene alterations per cell per day. Do the math. 10,000 times 100 trillion. That's how many times a day your cells are attacked from inside. That's why one person taking their antioxidants, taking their powders, taking their juices, will be completely different at a biological level because they're protecting their cells. Their cell is more resistant to oxidative stress because of a strawberry or a blueberry, blackberry, and all the other berries. So you're doing the right thing. Good. Next up, your medicine could be draining vital nutrients from your body. And what this says is that there is a report, drug muggers, which medications are robbing your body of essential nutrients, and it was written by a pharmacist, and it shows that, quote, vital nutrients are frequently negated when you're taking medication. Why? Especially statins, antibiotics are very bad. Painkillers are bad. And I'll just give you an example on blood pressure pills, antidepressants, diuretics, and hormone replacement therapy pills, and diabetic drugs. For example, diabetic drugs. This reduces the amount of glucose produced by the liver, limits the amount of sugar absorbed from the diet, and makes insulin receptors more sensitive. The risk? Fatigue, weakness, memory loss, shortness of breath, leg cramps, and frequent infections. So what should you do? Take extra coenzyme Q10. Probably, I'm going to say, 1,000 milligrams a day. Extra vitamin T, about 3,000 units a day. Now, if you take an antibiotic, and most Americans do, because they kill bad bacteria, but then they allow bacteria to still live that become resistant, and what is the risk by taking antibiotics? Heart disease, increased risk of cancer, leg cramps, low thyroid, and bone loss. So what you should do, take a lot of probiotics, generally up to 40 billion, three times a day, and also biotin at 1,000 micrograms, and then, for example, painkillers. Painkillers, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, including ibuprofen and aspirin, they work by tackling prostaglandins. Those are the chemicals in the body that trigger inflammation, pain, and fever. Well, prostaglandins also protect the lining of the stomach from damaging effect of acid, and they raise the risk of stomach ulcers and bleeding, and they lead to a loss of iron. Another risk is that you end up with a latch on to and bind to iron, rendering it useless, and that causes a big problem. So the risk of taking painkillers, heart disease, depression, diarrhea, mouth sores, and anemia. So anyhow, we just have to be very aware that every time you take a medication, you're running a nutrient deficiency with its risks. And next up, natural cure discovered for debilitating heart syndrome, POTS. And by the way, if you don't know what POTS is, it's postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. It was dubbed the Grinch syndrome because the majority of patients have a heart that is literally, well, to use Dr. Seuss's description of the Grinch's heart, two sizes too small. It affects a lot of people in the United States, primarily young women. And while it's isn't life-threatening, it can destroy the quality of a person's life and cause substantial disability by bringing on symptoms like dizziness, lightheadedness, fatigue, inability to stand for any period of time, and fainting. Well, what's the treatment? According to the latest journal, Hypertension, Journal of the American Medical Association, it's a natural treatment, and it's been around for a while. Trouble is, people haven't been paying attention to any of the natural treatments in orthodox medicine. And it's just a matter of quote, every POTS patient who completed the exercise regime showed an improvement in heart rate response, and over 53% were actually cured of their POTS. What to do? The unique component is to start training in a recumbent, meaning semi-reclining position, which is important to those who can't tolerate standing, and this strategy avoids the upright position that produces symptoms. So meaning you're going to be doing exercises, but in like a reclining position. There are a variety of recumbent or sitting exercises, cycling with a recumbent bike, rowing, swimming, all of those you can do in a reclining position for about 30 to 45 minutes four times a week. So, another cure. And finally, for those of you who've been using your green tea, and I hope you have, because the green tea either's tablets, capsules, tinctures, or tea contain an ingredient or a series of ingredients called polyphenols. Here's the latest from Immunology Letters, the peer-reviewed journal, and it says, green tea polyphenols shown to prevent fatal autoimmune diseases. Let me quote this from Jonathan Philip Natural News. It says, the Chinese have known the healing power of green tea for generations. Many believe that the unprocessed tea leaves can help to prevent or even cure many chronic diseases, including heart disease, cancer, and dementia. Thousands of scientific articles now provide compelling proof that the active polyphenol found in green tea, EGCG, has the power to increase the number of regulatory immune T cells. T cells play a crucial role in the suppression of autoimmune diseases, including Lou Gehrig's disease. Research published in the current journal Immunology Letters demonstrates that regular consumption, meaning daily, of green tea can help initiate your innate immune system to operate at peak efficiency in fighting invading pathogens. Now, as this audience knows, autoimmune diseases occur as the result of an imbalance in the immune system that results in the body mounting an attack against itself. And immune T cells are critical in providing a defensive shield that can protect against cancer proliferation and a host of diseases that we talk about regularly. And T cells also help to control systemic inflammation and can dampen the inappropriate responses to normal cells seen in autoimmune conditions. So green tea will help. This was done at Oregon State University Department of Nutrition. I'm Gary Knoll, the latest always on health and nutrition, healing, the environment, human nature, and important issues that impact our lives. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you from all over the world. We have people living in every country imaginable who are listening and sharing. Thank you very much for caring enough to share in your ideas about guests and topics and themes. I'm broadcasting live and video streaming live from our city studio here in New York City. And beginning in about a week to 2 weeks, the studio is built. We're just waiting on our cameras to come in. And what'll be kind of neat about this, we'll have about 10 cameras in different departments. And you'll be able to see some of the latest films being edited by our team of editors. We have 4 different films being edited simultaneously now, and then some of the researchers, and we'll talk with them on camera about what they're doing, what they're researching. Like right now, we're researching the International Monetary Fund, globalization, etc. And then we'll go up to Richard Gale, our producer, and he'll bring us up to date on coming guests. And then we'll be able to see anything we're talking about over some monitors that'll be there. It'll be really cool. So that's coming. Now, here is our issue of the day, and I'd like for you to think about this and then call in and share your point of view on this. This is from Professor Paul Craig Roberts. It's called Conspiracy Theory. And by the way, I'll tell you how strong this is. When I was on ABC for 12 years, and I had a very popular program on Sunday evening for 3 hours. There were certain topics that no one was really allowed to talk about. And why? Because the station didn't want to be labeled as a conspiracy theory forum. So I didn't care because I was mainly on Sunday night. The show was about health and nutrition and human nature and the environment. That's all I dealt with on Sunday night. And but other people would self-censor. And think how many people won't even talk about something because they're afraid they'll be labeled. But they don't look for the truth. They're just afraid. Here's what he has to say. I'm going to quote him now. While we were not watching, conspiracy theory has undergone Orwellian redefinition. A conspiracy theory no longer means an event explained by a conspiracy. Instead, it now means any explanation or even a fact that is out of step with the government's explanation and that of its media pimps. For example, online news broadcasts have been of anything that is considered conspiratorial have been equated with conspiracy theories by the New York Times simply because their opinions are what is official and what will be endorsed by the government, and vice versa. They only take what the government says is endorsable. In other words, as truth becomes uncomfortable for government and its ministry of propaganda, truth is redefined, all truths are redefined, as conspiracy theory. By the way, just as an aside, it kind of sounds like what I've been saying about there's only one truth in America today, and that is official truth. So if you're a Democrat, then you have an official truth, which is has to be official in Democrat ideology, same with Republicans, same with finance, same with education, same with health, same with medicine, same all industries. So if you have a truth that would challenge theirs, it's immediately thrown off the side of the cliff. You're relegated to non-existence. You know what they've left out when it comes to the majority of the people? They don't realize how hip the average American actually is. I've been out there. I've been speaking with thousands of Americans. They're really aware of all this. But they're under the radar. And because no one in power ever invites someone who's not in power to sit at their table to ask them for advice, it's always this idea of truth comes from above down. So we will tell you what to believe, what to eat, what to think, how to vote, where to live. We'll tell you what to spend your money on. We'll tell you how much debt you can have and what interest you're going to pay on it. We'll tell you what laws you're going to abide by, and this is your world. This is your life. Well, don't we have any say-so on it? No, because you're not deferred to. You're not considered the expert, the best and brightest. We are. I see. So my life really doesn't have any meaning except envisioned through your eyes. Now you get it. Okay. So that's, well, it's sad. When was the last time Bill Clinton ever invited the average person into his house to talk to him about some issues?
Agreed. No, never.
Today, he's on the front cover of Newsweek, talking about jobs.
The 14 reasons he'll
find
new jobs.
Yeah, is the 15th reason NAFTA? And how about the World Trade Organization? And how many jobs were lost because of that?
Right.
And how about him giving away the Glass-Steagall Act, which has caused about 5 million people to lose their jobs because of corporations that were taken over in casino capitalism, and then those jobs exported to India and China? Did they forget that somehow? They left that out. Newsweek left it out, didn't they?
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Oh, wow. All over their lattes while they were looking at the book. They don't work at Newsweek. They look in mirrors all day and just kiss them. New York Times, they kiss the mirror and somehow... They're precious,
polished,
aren't they? Yeah. They're. So when, they don't have toilets at the New York Times. You know, they're deities. You know, everything's just self-absorbed. For the rest of us, it's vanilla beans. For them, it's back to this. So let me repeat that. In other words, as truth becomes uncomfortable for government and its ministry of propaganda, truth is redefined as conspiracy theory, by which is meant an absurd and laughable explanation that we should ignore. When piles of carefully researched books and researched government documents and testimony of eyewitnesses made it clear that Lee Harvey Oswald was not President John F. Kennedy's assassin, the voluminous research, government documents, and verified testimony was simply dismissed as conspiracy theory. By the way, as an aside, on WBAI, I did an award-winning series, 69 1 hours, showing the truth behind the JFK assassination. 69 hours over 2 years. All right? But all that would be just dismissed as, oh, that's conspiracy theory. And In other words, the truth of the event was unacceptable to the authorities and to the Ministry of Propaganda that represents the interest of authorities. The purest example of how Americans are shielded from truth is the media's response to the large number of professionals who find the official explanation of September 11, 2001 inconsistent with everything they, as experts, know about physics, chemistry, structural engineering, architecture, fires, structural damage, the piloting of airplanes, the security procedures of the United States, NORAD's capabilities, air traffic control, airport security, and other matters. These experts, numbering now over 5,000, have all been shouted down by know-nothings in the media who brand the experts as conspiracy theorists. This despite the fact that the official explanation endorsed by the official media is the most extravagant conspiracy theory in human history. Let's just take, and I'm just only going to do one more paragraph here. Let's just take a minute to reacquaint ourselves with the official explanation, which is not regarded as a conspiracy theory despite the fact that it comprises an amazing conspiracy. The official truth is that a handful of young Muslim Arabs who could not fly airplanes, mainly Saudi Arabians, who came neither from Iraq nor Afghanistan, outwitted not only the CIA and the FBI, but also all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies and all intelligence agencies of the U.S. allies, including Israel's Mossad, which is believed to have penetrated every terrorist organization. And in addition, it outwitted every intelligence agency of the United States and its allies. The handful of young Saudi Arabians outwitted the National Security Council, the State Department, NORAD, airport security four times in the same hour. On the same morning, air traffic control caused the U.S. Air Force to be unable to launch interceptor aircraft and caused three well-built steel structural buildings, including one not hit by an airplane, to fall in a matter of seconds. In fact, the Saudi terrorists were even able to confound the laws of physics and cause the World Trade Center Building number 7 to collapse at free fall speed for several seconds, a physical impossibility in the absence of explosives used in controlled demolitions. The story that the government and the media have told us amounts to a gigantic conspiracy. Really something similar to a script of a James Bond film. Anyone who believes an architect, a structural engineer, or demolition expert who says that the videos show that the buildings are blowing up, not falling down. Anyone who believes a PhD physicist professor who says that the official explanation is inconsistent with known laws of physics. Anyone who believes expert pilots who testified that non-pilots or poorly qualified pilots cannot fly airplanes in such maneuvers. Anyone who believes the 100 or more first responders, including New York City police and firefighters, who testified that they not only heard explosions in the towers but personally experienced explosions. Anyone who believes University of Copenhagen nanochemist Niels Harrit, who reports finding unreacted nanothermite in dust samples from the World Trade Center towers. Anyone who is convinced by experts instead of by propaganda is dismissed as a conspiracy theorist. In America today and increasingly throughout the Western world, actual facts and true explanations have been relegated to the realm of kookiness. Only people who believe lies are socially approved and accepted as patriotic citizens. Your thoughts. Do we have room in the media to be able to sit with reasoned individuals with documentation and to explore without this arcane notion that there is only one truth, but actually look for the truth without denunciations? Are we capable of that? Why haven't we done that with any of the major issues? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We weren't even allowed to debate the truth behind the Iraq invasion. Go back to my archives. Go back to 3 months before the invasion of Iraq. We did a series of programs showing that the intelligence community had rejected the so-called informer, curveball, that said that there were weapons of mass destruction. The German intelligence, Mossad intelligence, and even people in the CIA had already given him lie detector tests and showed he was a liar. All this was coming out of a special private security group out of the vice president's office. Now we know that. Why is it we've never been able to have a discussion about that? Why is it when Cheney met with the energy industry and formed the whole way that we're going to deal with energy in the United States and where we're going to go, and those meetings were kept secret? Why is it that we should be having something kept secret if it's official U.S. policy? And now we know that they were going after the oil in Iraq. So we are the conspiracy theorist because we're looking for the truth and have the documents? What does that say about us? Your thoughts, we're going to take you right up. In a moment, I'm Gary Noll back. Please stay with us. Going to take your calls. All the lines are filled. We must have 50, 60 people trying to get through right now. I'll take as many as I can. Let's go up and say hello to George from Connecticut. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I was a steel worker during the summer. They were putting those buildings up, the towers, and I've talked to a lot of people, and I can't understand why people can't understand a simple thing. I said, look, just take kerosene, the essential element that the fuel was used in the planes, and put that under a frying pan. Why doesn't the frying pan completely dissolve? You know?
You're right.
They don't get it. They don't get it.
But you know, they don't get it not because they're stupid. They're not. They don't get it because your brain cannot hold two truths simultaneously. It goes against the basic laws of physics that no two energies can share the same space with equal intensity at the same time. There is always a dominant and submissive energy at work at all times. So they've already been told by the official newscasters that they respect and watch, either on Fox or MSNBC, CBS, ABC, CNN. They can't now have another truth. That's what's confusing. You know that. You're a steel worker. You work there. Now, we now have 5,000 scientists. We have physicists. We have people and engineers. We have structural engineers. We have mechanical engineers. We have architects, all of whom have examined the evidence. But mind you, it took this long for them to examine the evidence. And now that they're examining the evidence, they're saying there are inconsistencies with reality. And that's why they're joining together, and that's why... Will we be able to open people's minds to let them see that we were lied to? The official report is filled with inconsistencies and discrepancies. Not for a while. Because the truth is there. An open mind is not. Thank you, George. Joe from Bronx. Joe, your turn. You're up.
Okay. Yeah. Hello?
Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. Just on that topic, fire does weaken steel. So, that has an overall effect on the integrity of the structure.
At 4,300 degrees, not the degrees of the airlines.
Right. Okay. But I wanted to ask you another thing about, this is off topic. Electronics that have been shipped from Japan since the March tsunami earthquake, are they in danger of being radioactive?
I couldn't tell you that unless they were made in the immediate area. If they're made in the immediate area, yes, but it's simple enough to get an inexpensive, simple radiation meter, and you could determine that for yourself. I would doubt that would be the case for those further away. Let's say hello to Mike from Manhattan. Mike, I'm going to go through these real quick.
Yeah, Gary, I believe everything you say, and I think it's all right, but now what? I got to move to Montana and live on a ranch. I'm on your side. I'm not saying, you know.
Only if you love sheep. Mike, Mike, don't move anywhere yet. I'm not telling people to panic. I'm not telling them to be angry. I'm not telling them to move anywhere. I'm simply saying, first, let's find the truth so we'll know what it is, what is not the truth, and then what appropriate, reasonable, and responsible measures can we do? I just want a new committee that is not stacked with government insiders so that we can have authentic, independent experts evaluate issues and tell us what their reasoned opinion is. That's all I'm asking. It's that simple. Okay? Let's say hello to another Mike from Manhattan. Mike, we have another Mike. No, we have Matt from New York City. Matt, you're on.
Hi. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Matt.
Hi. Look, I agree with everything you're saying about 9/11. Ever since I saw those towers fall, I thought there was something really fishy about that. But I would like you to address the evidence or lack of it for this chemtrail controversy. I see the exact opposite thing, a bunch of know-nothings pointing at contrails and saying, they're poisoning us, they're poisoning us, and it's the most obvious plan ever to me. I just think that they don't understand the science of the atmosphere. Can you talk about that?
Sure. We are going to do a program on chemtrails by showing you the science of what is there and what is not there. Those theories that are overblown or do not have supporting documentation. And
you agree with me that scientists are not coming out in droves agreeing with the chemtrail?
That is correct. But I also believe that there are aspects of chemtrails that are serious.
Sure.
And that, therefore, I'm focusing upon what we can remember. I'm only focusing upon where we have evidence to support a notion. Look at it like this. What if we find, as I believe that we can prove, that some of these chemtrails were experimenting, and the people who were in the way of these chemtrails dispersion patterns were not informed. Now, do we have proof? Yes, we have absolute proof. I've published such proof, and it was the first published proof of this in the United States in an award-winning article in October 15th, 1989. Go to my website and read the article. It was a national magazine about how the government was spraying a whooping cough out of or pertussis out of a plane in the south, and suddenly you get the public health records, and you see spikes in whooping cough all throughout there and deaths from that. They were so where it is legitimate, we pay attention. Where it is legitimate, you let it go. Okay? But we have to understand, not all those chemtrails are going to be dangerous. Not all of them are emitting chemicals that will adversely affect people. But it's just like HAARP. We're doing a whole program on HAARP to show what influence it's had on the sea life and on ours as well. Quickly on the sea, on our environmental section, this is from Science Daily. This is from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Just to give you an idea, this is funded by the National Science Foundation. This is the highest scientific body in the United States. So call this out to those global warming deniers, like Lynn Beck and others. Quote, the fastest sea level rise in 2,000 years occurring right now linked to increasing global temperatures. Sean Hannity, come out of your cave, man. All right? Look at the evidence. Don't listen to the Koch brothers, paid-for scientists going on television, radio, and saying it's all nonsense. This is the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. Let me quote. Quote, the rate of sea level rise along the United States Atlantic coast is greater now than at any time in the last 2,000 years and has been shown a consistent link with changes in global mean surface temperature and sea level. This was done by a team from Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, Pennsylvania State University, University School of Engineering, Finland, Potsdam Institute for Climate Change Research, Yale University, Pennsylvania University, and National Science Foundation. So what this means is we're in chaos theory. The oceans are rising much faster, so you don't have 100 years before you're going to see cities like New York adversely affected. I predict you'll see New York City starting to get some water during water into its underground system within the next 10 years. Okay? Let's go over and say hello to my guest, Dr. Richard Francis. He is a research scientist from the University of California, Berkeley and Stanford before embarking on a journalism career. He's written for Echo Traveler's Wildlife Guides. He's published a lot of articles, including peer-reviewed journals. His recent book, Epigenetics, The Ultimate Mystery of Inheritance, which best puts into layperson's language the rising alternative view of inheritance and DNA function that challenges the conventional determinist theory of genetics that dominates much of biological and medical research today. Nice to have you with us today, Richard.
Glad to be here.
Richard, I think we should begin by first differentiating the alternative view of gene activity and function and determination in contributing to certain inherited and genetic traits in an individual from the conventional view of genes that dominates much of biology and medicine today. And my listeners in particular have some familiarity with epigenetics because we've had people on talking about it. And however, many questions still remain aside from the primary principle that environmental or external factors greatly influence gene expression and function. So please walk us through the fundamental differences between the determinist or reductionist view of genes, which dominates the media and science today, and the epigenetic view, and also speak on the role of the cell's environment and or on alterations in DNA.
Sure. The conventional view of genes is that they're sort of these executive chemicals that direct all the other chemicals in the cell, and that they basically all cause no effect. Whereas the epigenetic view is what I call the Janus view of the gene, which there are two sides of the gene. One is a causal side, as in the deterministic view, but the genes are also themselves the effects of what goes on in the cell. And this has, huge implications for how we think about genes. Genes, and it kind of makes them into more mundane entities than on the conventional view.
Okay. Explain to us the difference between those scientists and physicians who say, you're a criminal, you have a gene that shows you. You're fat, you have the fat gene. You're a loser in life, you got the loser in life gene. And people are actually lining up to assume that they don't have to be responsible for any of their lifestyle or behavior choices. It's the gene.
Right.
Differentiate that view from yours.
Okay, well, I mean, that view, which I think is dying, actually. There's a time in the 80s and 90s in particular when there was this gene for everything appearing in the New York Times, from everything from, homosexuality to obsessive-compulsive disorders and obesity. When the studies were examined carefully and repeated, the effects were very small, and they weren't differentiating between the gene in a particular context, how it affects, say, if it's in the liver cell versus the a sperm cell. But with the with epigenetics, the gene is, like I said, as much effect as cause, and the environment physically alters your genes. That's a message that a lot of people just haven't been able to take on board. That the people seem to think that genes, everything moves outward from the genes in a causal sense, but it's more of a reciprocal relationship between genes and environments. So as far as the genetic determinism goes, it makes no sense from an epigenetic perspective. I mean, if, for example, if you can inherit an epigenetic state which was environmentally induced, that kind of makes undermines the whole nature-nurture divide, for one thing. But it certainly undermines the view of the gene as this kind of omnipotent chemical.
Well, how about this? Many of us, myself included, believe that we do end up with the energy manifesting through the gene of our parents. And therefore, if we have parents that have certain qualities and characteristics, that we become a part of that. Now, we can have self-determination, and we can understand the positive or negative influences our parents may have had on us, or people in our environment that we were close to, siblings included. But most people don't assume that anything that happened in their parents is now going to happen in them, because even though we inherit genes from both our parents, which are fundamentally the major genetic template of each parent, does a child inherit the epigenetic changes found in the parents? And what are your views about reversing that if it's negative, or appreciating it if it's positive?
Okay, let me start with the second part first. The good news from epigenetics is that, unlike a mutation, say, a change in the DNA sequence, epigenetic effects are reversible. And much of research in epigenetic medicine is predicated on that, for example, in cancer research. But as far as your first question, sure, we inherit genes, and these genes affect every aspect of ourselves, but they don't affect it in the way that is the traditional view. Basically, genes are context dependent, as much so as any other factor in ourselves. So that an inherited gene is going to behave differently depending on what happens to you in your life.
All right, but we also know that when people have had organ transplants, they suddenly have manifested, and this has been well studied, will take on characteristics that were not previously in their background. And therefore, we can only assume that these came through the donor of those, if it's known what those donors' backgrounds were. But it's certainly there's something that's changed. And then if that's the case, then think of how many times we share the energy of another human being, and everything is energy at the end of the day. And genes can only manifest because of the energy, and frequently the memory of the cell is what we share. Could you then talk to us about the idea that the environment we live in, the food that we eat, the quality of the thoughts we have, all end up impacting the DNA?
Sure. That's a central message from epigenetics. I mean, yeah, you're right. The food we eat, the chemicals to which we are exposed, even our social environments affect our genes, physically alter our genes. So, for example, let me give you a nice little study on a social kind of physical impact on genes. This was done by a guy named Michael Meany at McGill University.
Okay, just let me tell our audience that my guest is Dr. Richard Francis. He is the author of Epigenetics, The Ultimate Mystery of Inheritance. We are going to be continuing this discussion on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, if you forget that, GaryNull.com, as we say goodbye to our land-based stations. Please continue, Richard.
Okay. So, Meany looked at the epigenetic effects of parental care as measured by a behavior called lick grooming. Mother mice lick their pups to varying degrees, and the tactile stimulation of licking, it turns out, has far-reaching consequences on the offspring's development, not least in their stress response. The pups of mothers who are generous lickers develop into well-adjusted adults, but the pups of the poor lickers tend to become stressed out for life. They are of a hyperactive stress response. Now, Meany found that the effects of this lick grooming are the result of epigenetic alterations in certain genes involved in the stress response, and that these epigenetic alterations promote a healthy stress response in the offspring of good mothers, but a hyperactive stress response in the offspring of poor mothers. and that these, you know, epigenetic effects tend to be lifelong. But even more interesting was that the offspring of the poorly mothered offspring become poor mothers themselves and sort of perpetuate this cycle in a sort of vicious circle. Whereas the offspring of the generous lickers, the good mothers, become well-adjusted and their offspring do too and become good mothers in a sort of virtuous cycle. Now, this is a form of, it's kind of an indirect form of epigenetic inheritance. But one of the interesting findings and the, positive findings is that these effects can be reversed. Even these transgenerational effects can be reversed such that if you expose the poorly mothered, highly stressed out pup to well-adjusted peers, then their stress response becomes much better, much toward normal. And even in lieu of that, there's also chemical ways to reverse those epigenetic effects.
All right. A major concern today, and this is my last question for you, is the focus in medical research, particularly in research funded by pharmaceutical industry and our federal health agencies that want to relegate every kind of disease, even negative emotions and behaviors that are not yet categorized as illnesses, but will be solely based upon genetic factor or a particular gene that is discovered to be expressed more in a certain population than another. A good example of this is the entire vaccine-autism relationship. And recently, a Freedom of Information Act uncovered the large number of settlements that have been finalized out of court, giving compensation to families with children injured from vaccines, and the large percentage of these that pertain to autism. But the medical cartels continue to claim that autism is inherited and is genetic in origin, even if a recent University of Montreal study showed that the majority of these identified so-called autism genes are de novo, meaning they were not inherited from the parents, but are unique to the autistic child, either in utero or later after birth. But then we find the leading spokesperson for Vaccines Day, Dr. Paul Offit, presenting an argument that basically says, okay, these kids show autistic traits, but this is not real autism. It's really just inflammatory encephalitis due to the vaccine, but it's not real autism, which is strictly genetic in origin. I don't deny that there are affected genes in autism. However, we are left with a chicken and egg argument regarding first cause, and epigenetics would indicate that it is external environmental factors, perhaps some cases vaccine, but also one or other numerous toxic chemicals or pollutants that are contributing to such a rapid rise in autism that conventional genetic inheritance theory is unable to account for. So I would like to hear your arguments that are in any other example of medical science that also follow this line of reasoning from the medical establishment that can be challenged.
Well, autism is a good case in point. I mean, whatever genes that they have discovered that are associated with autism account for a hugely small percentage of the cases. And the problem with the popular press, people get the impression that it's much a larger, I think, and part of that is a problem the way science is reported in the popular press. But there are, another number of potential environmental factors influencing autism. For example, I briefly discuss, and this is very preliminary results of studies that seem to indicate that too much folic acid is associated with autism. And as you know, all our foods now are supplemented with folic acid because low folic acid is associated with certain kinds of birth defects, spinal tube problems. So once that was discovered, then people started augmenting cereals and breads and everything with folic acid. But folic acid has huge epigenetic effects, it turns out. And So it's kind of like an uncontrolled experiment at this point. And some have suggested that it's related to the increase in autism. The onset of folic acid augmentation in our foods is correlated with the increase in autism diagnoses.
Okay. You've made your point. And, Richard, you've made a lot of good points in epigenetics, and hopefully people will take the time to read it. It's a very important book for the lay people to understand DNA function, challenges to the conventional determinist theory of genetics, and think of all the women and their daughters, completely healthy, not a thing wrong with them, but back in the 1970s and 80s and 90s and 2000s, their doctors said, oh, we discovered you had the gene that can cause breast cancer, and they opted for preventative mastectomies, mutilating their bodies. Thousands and thousands of women in the United States chose to have, their logic was sound. If I can cut my breasts off now when they're healthy, then I won't have breast cancer later. But the reasoning behind it was flawed. What if it's not the gene that's determining your breast cancer? What if it's lifestyle and environment? And think
or
of
both.
All, yeah, and both. You know. Think of the people that mutilated themselves for no good reason. So all the more that we should pay attention to this topic.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. That's a very good example of the downside of genetic determinism.
Dr. Richard Francis, thank you very much for being our guest today.
Okay, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Gary Knoll. Just one other quick thing here. From the BBC News and Science and Environment, the world's oceans in, quote, shocking decline. The oceans are in a worse state than previously suspected. In a new report, they warn that ocean life is, quote, at high risk of entering a phase of extinction of species unprecedented in human history. Why? Because we overfished, we polluted, climate change, all acting together. So this is from the panel of the International Program on the State of the Ocean. One more thing to remind people, Glenn Beck, if you ever get around to reading, Professor Alex Rogers, professor of biology at Oxford University, you'll learn that the truth you've been holding, that there is no such thing as global warming, or that it's not man-made and we shouldn't be affecting industries, well, the next time you go out into the ocean, just realize that you are a part of a wake. You are in a New Orleans death march where they're playing the music, you're listening to it, and you don't realize that in front of you is a dead person. You got the ocean that's dying. Oh, and those of you who wondered, this is the latest information, U.S. Geological Survey from Weather Online. The number of recorded earthquakes is rising sharply. Quote, research by Irish Weather Online using data from the U.S. Geological Society has found that earthquake activity from 5 to 9.9 magnitude in the last 6 months already exceeded the total annual seismic activity for the last 6 years. We had 1,445 earthquakes in the last 6 months, ranging from 5 to 9.9, and they're getting worse. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
Jumping that paddle wheel, pumping black water, keep rolling on past just the same.
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on?
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on?
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me? Yeah, keep on.
Gary Null Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.